Welcome to the Digital Families Podcast. I'm Leonie Smith, sometimes known as the Cyber Safety Lady. I'm a cyber safety educator, and this podcast is all about learning how to use the digital technology in our homes with more safety and balance. My guest today is Melinda Tankard-Reist. Melinda is an author, speaker, media commentator and advocate for young people. She is best known for her work addressing sexualization, objectification, harms of pornography, sexual exploitation, trafficking and violence against women. Melinda is author, editor of 6 books, including Getting Real, Challenging the Sexualization of Girls and Big Porn, Inc., Exposing the Harms of the Global Pornography Industry. Melinda has appeared on ABC's Q&A, the Gruen Sessions, and many other TV and radio programs. She is also the co-founder of the grassroots campaigning movement, Collective Shout, which you can find on Facebook. I'm following them on Facebook, for a world free of sexploitation. And she'll explain a lot more about that as we go in today's chat. Melinda, welcome to the Digital Families Podcast.
A pleasure to be here, Leonie. Thanks for having me.
Melinda, tell us a little bit about your background. What led you to becoming passionately involved in this area of sexual exploitation of our young people?
Well, I'm a journalist by background, and I always felt strongly that I was supposed to document issues that didn't get the attention I believed they needed. Mm-hmm. And I started to work on my local newspaper in country Victoria, and one of the first pieces I wrote was on the opening of a local women's refuge. And I interviewed the women that were running it. I interviewed some of the survivors of violence, and it really opened my eyes to the reality of the mistreatment and abuse of women. I then was awarded a scholarship to study journalism internationally, and I travelled extensively. I saw the second-class status of women, violence, trafficking, exploitation, issues around female genital mutilation, dowry deaths, bride burning, the discrimination against the girl child in so many areas, including education and food. And it just built my passion, I suppose, for addressing harms to women and girls. And then I started writing my books. And my third book actually is really what I suppose cemented my work in the field, Getting Real, Challenging the Sexualization of Girls. And that led to the formation of Collective Shout for a World Free of Sexploitation.
So, Melinda, I've been following you on social media. You've been travelling around the country, talking to students, a lot of students around the country, and we know from a lot of the surveys that have been done in Australia, particularly through the Safety Commissioner's Office, that everything is ramping up online for kids, whether it's bullying, whether it's predatorial behaviour, and also this area that you're involved in, the exposure to pornography and how children are being groomed online and also their interactions with each other. How are you seeing the effect of COVID-19 on your work in this area, and what are you finding out about as you travel around the country?
I think the level of isolation, the level of time, increased time spent online, increased the risks to our young people, increased the activities of predators. Who knew that children were online even more? And eSafety has documented that increased level of risk and vulnerability, more children exposed to predators, more children exposed to online harassment, approaches of, to girls on Instagram, underage girls, and also, of course, the global pornography industry, which needs to build its next generation of consumers. That's its build, that's its business model. So more children exposed to explicit sexual imagery and harmed as a direct result. So the harms that were already there became amplified and magnified during the extensive periods of lockdown.
Yeah, the area of exposure to pornography is a huge concern for parents as well. When I do a parent talk, I'll ask them, give them a survey about what they're concerned about. And a year or two ago, I have to say it was mainly cyberbullying. And this year, it is contact from strangers online and exposure to adult content online that is the number one and two issue for parents at the moment. Now, there's been constant calls for what's called age gating on pornography online, which makes absolutely perfect sense to anyone. If children can't buy drugs and alcohol online, and they can't do a lot of other things that they have to wait till they're 18. Mm-hmm. What's the problem with blocking access to pornography, which we know is just so easy for them to see? And it's not even that they're searching for it half the time. It's in their faces. In fact, I've been doing a lot of work in Roblox, Melinda, which is got no age limit on it at all. Every single week I go in there, I see photographic porn in the most popular games in Roblox, which 6 and 7 year olds are going in. Why is this so hard for us to age gate pornography?
So at Collective Shout, for more than 10 years, we've been calling for proof of age protections to limit exposure to pornography. None of us are claiming this is some magic bullet that will solve the problem, but it would be something. The fact is that children as young as 7, 8, 9, 10 are being exposed to rape porn, torture porn, sadism, violence, extreme hardcore degradation of women. And the most violent genres are the most popular. And so with the click of a button, our children's developing sexual templates are being molded and shaped by content which teaches them that sexual arousal is linked to sexual aggression. And we have been criticizing the government of this country and governments globally for the lack of action. Why is it that a multi-billion dollar predatory industry should come before the welfare of vulnerable children especially? And at last, the Australian government has responded to a committee inquiry recommendation of 16 months ago, which recommended age verification, proof of age protections, which would provide at least one layer of protection, an obstacle for children to protect them from this kind of content. Now, the government has given the eSafety Commissioner 12 to 18 months to come up with a plan, a roadmap for the rollout of age verification. We actually think that's too long. Every day, children are being damaged by exposure to pornography. We are seeing a rise of child-on-child sexual abuse at rates never before seen. We are having child development experts, psychologists, psychiatrists tell us that they are treating more children for compulsive porn use. We are certainly having more parents telling us that their child was exposed, either at school, on the school camp, on the school bus, at the friend's sleepover, some of those children as young as 6 years of age. We also know that there are, as I said, we've seen this rise of children acting out sexually inappropriately on other children, including at schools. Teachers are telling this to us all the time. So it's overdue. The welfare of children should be a priority here. It has not been. And, you know, it's time something was done. This is one thing that could stop some children from being exposed to porn, or at least delay the age of exposure.
Yeah, there's always this argument, and it's been going on for as long as I've been working in this space, which is now 11 years, that, oh, you know, these kinds of measures won't stop kids from finding it. They can find ways around it. And I've always said, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the accidental exposure generally. It's a guardrail. If you make it, it's like anything else. We can't stop kids underage drinking, but we don't just sort of give up and allow them carte blanche access to alcohol. So I don't understand why people find that so difficult to understand, that what we're asking for is at least some protections from children that are simply looking for something online that's totally innocent, and then they come across graphic porn. It might involve animals and all kinds of things. That's one of the common things I hear, Melinda, is kids being exposed to bestiality, which is also extremely popular online. And when I talk to parents about that, you can see their eyes just go, oh my God, really? Because the average parent has no clue about that dark side of the internet. Technically, do you think it would be really difficult to do, Melinda? Do you know anything about the technology around how hard it would be to do that?
Well, the fact is, just because something may be challenging doesn't mean we don't try to do it. And just because we can't achieve everything doesn't mean we don't try to achieve one thing. The fact is, yes, 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds still get access to alcohol. Oh, okay, does that mean we don't have any rules against it? 14 and 15-year-old boys may get into strip clubs. So do we just allow that, you know, just open it up, open all that stuff up to our kids? It's ridiculous. And it's all part of the PR spin of a global profit-driven industry, which, you know, puts out these false and, you know, PR-driven claims, which have stopped action for a very long time because, you know, they've got money and money buys power. However, let's try it. Now, there's different models that eSafety will look into. One of the models is that there is a third-party approved verifying body where you go and you present your ID, you get a digital pass, then you access porn. This whole idea that you would need to put your ID into a porn site every time you access porn is false. The system won't work like that. Another falsehood is that it's just a tick-a-box system. If it was just a tick-a-box system with no third-party approved verification, we wouldn't be supporting it. So, you know, let's get the facts on the table. Let's research what are the best models, what will be, what is the most effective way of doing this, and let's just hurry up and do it and not allow global corporations and big tech companies to continue to have everything their way. You know, the porn industry is winning and we, the rest of us, are losing.
Is there any country that's getting it right, Melinda?
Not yet, no. The UK was very close to doing it and then caved into the vested interests of the global sex industry. That's not the official reason they gave, but, you know.
It sounds a bit like the whole cigarette company,
yeah, absolutely,
doesn't it?
That's right. Cigarettes don't really cause cancer. The big PR spin around that, profit-driven, profit motives, of course, vested interests got in the way. But Australia doesn't have to wait for the rest of the world. Why should we? Australia can give this a go and hopefully come up with a system that will, you know, work as well as it can while we also deliver education, educate parents, have other, you know, forms of regulation and empower and equip young people themselves to resist porn culture, to resist the toxic scripts of pornography, which is contributing to sexual harassment, girls being groped, girls being touched, girls being pressured to send sexual images. Girls tell us their bodies are compared to the bodies of porn stars. A big theme of my last tour, which was WA and Queensland with my colleague Daniel Principe, was the number of girls telling us that they are experiencing every day sexual moaning from boys, including in the classroom, even girls as young as seven, saying, can you please ask the boys, year seven boys, to stop making sexual grunting noises in our ears? A boy thinking that girls want to be choked and gagged and strangled and ejaculated on their faces. Where do they get this idea? A boy doesn't innately think, oh, girls love to be choked and strangled, right? They're learning that. They're learning it from pornography. The world's biggest sex educator, the world's biggest department of education, as I said recently in a piece for the ABC, that's where they're learning it, and it's girls primarily who are suffering the consequences of porn-saturated boys in their lives.
Yeah, there's been a bit of discussion I've noticed from, you know, in the media from people saying that this whole issue around consent at the moment, you know, that has really taken off, and rightly so, that the influence of porn isn't really a large part of this whole issue that we're seeing around consent, because the argument is that the internet hasn't been around forever, but this kind of behaviour has been. And I'm questioning that, because I would question that this is happening with younger and younger children, as you've just pointed out, that wouldn't necessarily have fallen into that kind of behaviour before without the internet. Would you agree with that?
What would you say to these? Stupid argument, and I'm just sorry, I have no patience for it. The fact is, the global research is solid on pornography as a driver and a contributing driver to violence against women.
Yeah.
Attitudes lead to behaviors, and pornography shapes attitudes. Pornography tells boys that sexual aggression and arousal are connected. It tells boys that no means yes. Good luck with your consent program when boys are imbibing the idea from very young ages that if a girl says no secretly, she wants to be raped. Porn tells boys that women and girls should be submissive to them. It trains them in a sense of entitlement to the bodies of women and girls. So, yes, of course, women and girls have always been abused through history. There's no doubt about this. But this is abuse on steroids. This is supercharging harmful, toxic ideas about how men and boys should behave towards women and girls. It's conditioning them in ways we have never seen before. Mainstream pumping of misogyny and sexism into children's lives through devices every day from morning until night. That's going to have an impact. We're going to see some results.
It's also creeping in everywhere, Melinda. I'm seeing it in kids' games, like in Roblox. A lot of the avatars in there are basically dressed up as lap dancers and strippers.
That's right.
And this is, you know, the most popular online game at the moment. It's gone past Minecraft.
Yes.
If you have a look on TikTok, the OnlyFans, the push for OnlyFans, which is, you know, that site basically, which is a subscription-based model.
It's all part of the sex industry. It's all part of the sex industry.
And it's creeping into in all these different apps. And I think I saw something you wrote recently about Snapchat being one of the, you know, the main ways that predators are contacting kids online at the moment. What are you finding out from these students themselves as you're going into schools about their history and their exposure, where this is happening, and are you asking them about their exposure to porn?
Of course, I've been collecting their stories for years. I've got hundreds of accounts from young people. What girls are telling us, and the stories are getting worse, they are getting worse younger. Girls are telling us that boys are describing in graphic detail the porn they watched the night before. Girls are saying, please tell the boys to stop making fun of our bodies because we don't look like the girls you watched in porn. We are 13, don't treat us as porn stars. Please stop sexual moaning in class. They're sick of the rape jokes. Another theme that's come out recently is that boys are threatening to harm themselves if a girl doesn't send them a naked picture. I'm going to die, I'll hurt myself, I'll cut myself if you don't send me a picture. That's the level of emotional manipulation that girls are experiencing. And I'm talking young girls. I have girls saying, we have the right to say no and not be punished, not be bullied, not be called names for standing up for ourselves, for enforcing our personal boundaries. And we also have boys telling us that they... often in tears, that they cannot get free of pornography, that it's consumed their lives, that they've stopped playing sport, they've stopped hanging out with friends, they certainly don't have a girlfriend, they don't spend as much time with their family, and they tell us that it leaves them feeling lost and lonely. So they're recognizing that it's harmful for them, not all of them, of course, but more of them. And wanting to do something about it, wanting to reimagine other ways of being young men than the way that the porn industry tells them. But, you know, they're up against it. A porn culture is the wallpaper of their lives from the time they're born. And it's not a matter of, you know, if they'll be exposed. It's a matter of when. And we're knocking the empathy out of our boys. This is my biggest concern, that they are taught to be aroused by cruelty and extreme brutality. You know, this is an expression of the cultural norms now that we have inflicted on our children. And, you know, when the Chanel Contos petition emerged, and very important that she gathered all of those accounts now, thousands of them, you know, adults of my generation seem to be shocked and horrified and alarmed at what was in those stories. But those stories are stories that, you know, I've been gathering for years. This was not news to me. This is the reality, the daily reality, the daily lived experience of our girls subjected to disgusting comments, you know, humiliation, sexual intrusion. I have young women say to me, he went for my throat without even asking. You know, this is the level of brutality and callousness that is now linked with sexuality. Nothing about intimacy, true human connection, mutuality, you know, a slow discovery of sexuality. And it's nothing like that. It's really about conquest, about a young woman as a trophy, another conquest, the collection of pictures, the sharing of images between boys, some of whom have images of thousands of girls on their devices. And as I said, it's just time that we address this as on a whole of community level, because, you know, the adults have let this happen. This has all happened on our watch. So now we need to go into overdrive to try to correct it.
So what I'm hearing you say very loudly and very clearly, Melinda, is the lack of awareness around this. Mm. So you've been hearing these stories and collecting these stories for years, and it really highlights a massive problem that we have, that children are not able to confide in someone. They're not able to tell their parents about what's going on. Mm. Parents listening to this now, how can we do something about that?
We have to need to act personally. We need to act politically. How do we act personally? Know what's going on. Find out what's going on. Know the reality. Know the truth. Understand what life is like for your children. Have rules around devices. I ask parents in my parent sessions, how many of you bought your child's mobile phone? Almost all put their hands up. How many of you pay the phone bills? Pretty much all of them put up their hands. I say, surely this means you actually own the device. You know, it's your device. Stop trying to be your kid's best friend. Don't, if you hand them an internet-enabled device, your child, you are handing to your child a hand grenade that will blow up in their face. Why do they need internet-enabled devices? Why give them a smartphone? They can have a dumb phone if they need to call you, you know. We have to face this reality that's what's happened. That's what our children are being exposed to. Obviously, having the computer in a public place in the home, handing in mobile phones at night, making sure they don't have a second one, making sure they don't have a second SIM card. They might hand in one SIM card, they've got another one. You know, they're smart. We've got to give them A+ for being running rings around us as adults. And you know, some schools are taking the initiative now of no mobile phones at school. I think that's fantastic, because it's not only about what they're being exposed to. It's about the lack of ability to focus, to concentrate, to learn. You know, we know how these devices, being online all the time, rewires the brain. They can't focus. There's too much distraction. They can't sleep properly. It's the most sleep-deprived generation.
And they're watching porn up the back of the room, Melinda.
Exactly. So, you know, I admire the schools that have really taken a stand on this, that have just gone back to old-fashioned ways of learning things.
Yeah, I think with a lot of schools, some of these schools argue that, oh, we could teach them how to use the mobile phones, and you're making an enemy out of technology. And I really don't think that's the point. The teachers I talk to overwhelmingly say that when they work in schools that have mobile phone bans, there is a massive change in children's ability to socialize, the culture, they play in the playground.
Yes.
And children are coming to less harm. It's not about whether they learn better with or without mobile phones.
Yes.
It's the sort of harms that actually occur in the playground, the sharing of pornography, taking videos of people when they shouldn't be, and all that kind of stuff.
But I'd like to say something about how parents can act collectively as well. It shouldn't just be up to them individually. They need to get together and act politically. And so we advise lobbying, asking your MP, what are they doing about this? The fact is, parents, all of us, pay the salaries of our MPs, and they should be doing some work for that money. They need to know this is a concern, or they won't do anything about it. They need to know there's a constituency for change, that there's votes in it. So they need to hear from you, otherwise they won't do anything. Obviously, don't buy into the sexualized culture. Stop buying the sexualized clothes. Don't allow the violent music in the home, the violent games in the home. You know, make a stand that way. How am I going to spend my money? Am I going to spend it ethically on companies that aren't objectifying women and sexualizing girls? And join Collective Shout. Obviously, I'm going to say that, collectiveshout.org. We're on all the socials. You know, we're running global campaigns and campaigns domestically against companies which engage in sexualization, objectification, to sell stuff, to flog products.
I noticed you were doing something on a company that was selling Playboy.
Yes, City Beach, and selling Playboy products to children, marketing the Playboy brand, a global brand of the sex industry, responsible for the degradation of women on a massive global scale, and including a child sexual abuse content, which people don't seem to realise. And why would City Beach want to link its name with this brand, this women-hating brand? We also have a campaign right now against Honey Burdette in our family shopping centres, which right now has a video loop playing of a woman being choked. Now, we know that choking is a red flag for homicide. Why would Westfield and other major shopping centres around the country, which pride themselves on being male champions of change, the male CEOs signing a pledge to drive out sexism in the community, why are they acting as landlord to this tenant, which is a repeat corporate offender, which is in breach of the advertising code of ethics multiple times? We've pretty much lost count. Don't say you care about sexism and misogyny and violence at the same time as allowing videos of women being choked on a loop in your shopping centres. We call total hypocrisy. So, you know, that's a campaign you might like to join us in. The more voices, the more achievements we can have. We had 17 in a row last year against corporations. So we need to challenge it, you know, at the corporate level as well as on the personal level.
Okay, so just finishing up here, Melinda, if we do have only, you know, we have up to 18 months before this age gating comes in.
And as No, that may not even come in then. That's when we get a plan for the rollout.
Oh, okay. So in the meantime, it looks like from everything you've said, parents need to be much more involved with their kids and their devices. What other advice would you like to give to parents at this particular time?
Talk to your kids often, talk to them early. I have two resources to help parents have the difficult conversation about pornography with their kids. It's a hard conversation. We wish we didn't have to have it, but we don't have that luxury. If we are not talking to our children about pornography, someone else is, and they may not share our values for our child. So the two resources I offer are How to Talk to Your Kids About Pornography, easy to read, accessible, very practical. And then a second companion book is Good Pictures, Bad Pictures. You read that with your child. The aim is to porn-proof your child. And I have a package deal on those two books through my website, melindatankardreese.com. We have to keep the channels of communication open. Our children need to be able to trust us, to have these conversations, to equip them to make good decisions, to help them see that their body is theirs. No one else has the right to touch it, that they are allowed to enforce their own boundaries with their parents' help. We also need to keep the channels open because your child will see pornography. I hate to tell you, but they will. And if you have a big shock reaction, if you get angry, if the child feels blamed, they are not going to tell you next time it happens.
Absolutely.
So try not to appear shocked. Pause, take a breath, stay calm, ask them about it. Tell them that this happens a lot. If this is normal, tragically, happens to children a lot. Yeah. And then look at what you can do to stop them seeing it again. If it's happened at school, raise it with school authorities. It's likely that if your child has seen porn at school, other children will be exposed as well. And, of course, model respect-based behaviour in the home. It's not always what we say, it's what we do. They need to see what healthy, respectful relationships look like in the family home.
Thank you so much for your time today, Melinda, and all the best for your all the work that you're doing around the country. And we'll be in touch at some point, I'm sure, and catch up and see how things are going.
Thanks so much for your interest and your support and your own work as well, Leonie. Thank you.
Thank you, Melinda.
No worries.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to the Digital Families podcast today. If any of these issues mentioned have raised any concerns, you can contact Beyond Blue on 1300 22 46 36, Lifeline on 13 11 14, or the Kids Helpline if there's a parent line available in Queensland and Northern Territory. If you like this podcast, leave us a review or some feedback on our YouTube channel or your favourite podcast app. And tune in again next week for our next chat about all things digital and how it affects families.